think Elvis is just Coolsville, don't you?
But I think I wrecked my shoes.
It's okay. They're too small.
Finally, the great creator began the careful task of feathering the birds.
We love stories!
It's time for the Apple Seed, filled with stories for you and your family, all kinds of stories from all kinds of tellers, talking about folk tales and fairy tales and tall tales and family tales and personal tales and historical tales and more. We've been bringing you these stories since 2013 from great tellers all over the world. And these stories, we hope, have sparked memories and thoughts for you that you can share with the people that you love. That's what we love hearing about. You can reach out to us and tell us your story at theappleseed@byu.edu. That kind of storytelling, sharing around the kitchen table or around the campfire or around the living room, can make for memories that last a lifetime. And today we're going to have a great time here on the Appleseed. Many of you know that we here at the Appleseed are suckers for a good love story. And though we always love any tale that takes place in a kingdom far, far away or after a meet cute in a rom-com, we know that sometimes the best love stories are found in our own family histories, simple tales about real people who lived in our own past. Those stories express some of the deepest displays of love through ups and downs of ordinary, plain, lovely life. And we're going to bring you a story today about my grandpa and his first wife, Arilda Madeline Anderson. It's a story called Dancing with Arilda. That's a little later in the hour. And because we know that the sharing of family and personal stories can sometimes be the spark that ignites a memory that you can share with the people that you love, I'll share another childhood memory of being asked by a woman in my neighborhood to learn some of the dances that she knew when she was a young girl and to dance them with her granddaughter. That's coming up a little later in the hour as well. And of course, because great stories come into our lives in all kinds of ways, we'll have a conversation with our friend Rachel Wadham about a book called The Blue House, and you won't want to miss that. But first, we've got a story from Lina Del Simons. It's a story called El Pájaro Cu del Perú. This is a story about parrots that Lainey tells in both Spanish and English. Peru has over 1,000 different kinds of birds, about 139 of which are native to Peru, and all of which are beautiful in their own way. But how has this come to be? Well, in the beginning, the great creator is busy making all the birds, giving them each their own beautiful set of colored feathers in this story. However, by the time that the creator gets to the last bird, El Pájaro Cu, the creator has run out of feathers, yet Pájaro Cu won't stay featherless for long. Dive into the story, El Pájaro Cu del Perú, by Lina Del Simons, here on the Appleseed.
Este es un cuento para mi abuelita. This is a story for my little grandmother, Mama, who loved nature, but who especially adored los pájaros, the birds. Hace muchos años, long ago, when the world, el mundo, was brand new, and all the creatures were first taking shape, the great creator took special care when she formed los pájaros, the birds. First, she built their round little bodies and heads, giving each one dos ojos, two eyes, and un pico, a little beak, and then placed them up on two skinny legs, dos patas. Then she gave each bird a pair of wings, las alas. Finally, the great creator began the careful task of feathering the birds, creating owl and little dove and crow and peacock and all the rest. Each bird looked quite different from the other, as each type of bird had its own special color of feathers, las plumas de distintos colores. You might say that the birds were quite diverse and multicolored. But after the great creator worked very hard feathering the various types of birds, los pájaros, something unexpected happened. She ran out of feathers, no más plumas. And so, the very last bird, el pájaro cu, received no feathers at all, nada. Now, while the great creator felt badly about this, el pájaro cu didn't seem to mind one bit, no. So, he went about his normal business, going here, and going there, but everywhere he went stark naked. Well, now the other birds were quite worried by this. Ay, 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 ay. And so they held un consejo, a special council meeting, to discuss this new development. Of course, Wise Owl was first to speak.
What can we do for El Pájaro Cu?
Little Dove quickly replied.
Oh, pity the poor little one, pobrecito, oh!
Then Proud Peacock fanned his beautiful feathered tail and exclaimed,
Ay, 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 ay. El pájaro cu looks simply awful, muy feo. All of the animals, todos los animales, talk badly about him all the time. He's giving us birds very bad press.
After a while, los pájaros, the birds, agreed that something must be done. Wise Owl made a suggestion.
I know what we can do. If each of us gave El Pájaro Cu one of our own feathers, then he will be completely covered, and we won't miss one feather, una pluma.
All of the birds, todos los pájaros, thought this was a pretty good idea. Una buena idea. So Owl was the first to happily hand over one of his brown and tan feathers, una pluma carmelita. Then Little Dove gave a crisp white feather, pluma blanca. Guinea Hen offered a shimmering silver, pluma plata. While Roadrunner's was chocolate brown, chocolate. Parrot gave an emerald green, pluma verde. Canary's was amarilla, bright yellow. Señor Crow gave a jet black pluma negro. Cardinal's was roja, fiery red. And Blue Jay's? Si, azul, blue. Finally, Elfine Peacock, reluctantly handed over one of his long green and blue feathers, una de sus plumas verde y azul. Well, all of these feathers together made quite a spectacular, colorful coat for El Pájaro Cu. Es muy estupendo. But just as El Pájaro Cu was about to receive his new coat of plumas, Peacock suddenly screeched,
Ay, 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 ay! No, 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 no! With this coat of plumas, El Pájaro Cu will be the most beautiful bird around, el pájaro más lindo. And before long, he will be strutting around with too much pride, con mucho orgullo, putting all of us to shame.
Little Dove interrupted.
Oh, but we can't leave him naked, desnudo, no!
Señor Crow agreed.
Is a disgrace to the entire community of birds. Deshonra! Ah, 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 ah. Well, everyone, todos los pájaros, including El Pájaro Cu, wondered what to do. ¿Qué hacer?
Finally, Owl had otra buena idea, another good idea.
I know. If we give El Pájaro Cu our coat of plumas, I promise, yo le prometo, to watch over him carefully, to make sure he doesn't act vain, muy vano, and snobbish, and cause us any problems. No problema.
And so, in no time at all, El Pájaro Cu was the best-dressed bird around. ¡Ay, qué lindo! Even Peacock was awed into silence. El Pájaro Cu was quite surprised by this. So he decided to go see for himself just what he looked like. So he raised his glistening wings, las alas, and then he flew straight to the pond, where he took one look at his marvelous self and was thrilled, encantado. Then El Pájaro Cú began to strut around the other birds, raising his beak high up in the air, el aire. As soon as he looked up towards the heavens, El Pájaro Cú began to believe that he was too perfect, muy perfecto, to remain on earth. Suddenly, El Pájaro Cú turned to the other birds, otros pájaros, and with a little laugh, he lifted his beautiful alas to the sky and darted up towards heaven, el cielo. Owl quickly tried to catch up to El Pájaro Cú, but his short wings, las alas, weren't meant for such flying, and he wasn't a match for El Pájaro Cú. Slowly, Owl spiraled back down to Peru, where he found los otros pájaros angrily waiting for him in the branches. Señor Crow screamed, ah, none of us has ever flown to heaven, el cielo. El Pájaro Cú will surely cause us trouble there, Now we're all going to pay for his vanity, su vanidad, Peacock quickly agreed, it's all the fault of that owl. I warned you all. Owl, queremos que devuelvas las plumas. We want our feathers back ahora mismo, right now. Everyone agreed with that. As a matter of fact, los pájaros were so upset with Owl that they drove him from his tree and chased him far away. Owl found safety in a cave about a mile down the road. He stayed there for many days, until one day, Owl received a visitor. It was Roadrunner, su buen amigo, his good friend. Roadrunner said,
Mi amigo, I brought you some dinner, comida,
Muchas gracias, Roadrunner. Ay, whatever am I to do?
You must stay here where it is safe. Señor Crow has sworn to get his revenge unless you get back his pluma from El Pájaro Cú,
Owl thought a moment. Then I will hunt for food at night while Señor Crow is sleeping, durmiendo. And from the tops of the trees, I will look all around and call for El Pájaro Cú until he returns to Peru.
Roadrunner agreed.
And I will search down low for him on the road,
And that's exactly what los dos amigos, the two friends, did. Even today, they are looking for El Pájaro Cú because, he never came back. So this is why Roadrunner streaks from one place to another, always with his head down low, searching the road for El Pájaro Cú. And this is why Owl can turn his head around as far as it can go to see. And when you listen late at night, tarde en la noche, you can still hear Owl calling for that bird.
Coo, 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 coo.
El Pájaro Cú del Perú, a story told for you bilingually by Lene Del Siemens. It's from a collection of stories called Ay Caramba, Ay. There's a lot coming up this hour. You're going to hear from Lynn Ruhlmann, a story called Real Baby Maybe. You're going to hear a song from the award-winning storyteller and songwriter Susan Reed called Shoes. But after a quick break, because we know that great stories come into our lives in all kinds of different ways, we'll have a conversation with our friend Rachel Wadham about a book called The Blue House. And because we know that the sharing of family stories and personal stories can spark memories and thoughts for you that you can share with the people that you love, I'll share a memory from my youth about being asked by a very elderly lady in my neighborhood to learn some of the dances that she knew when she was a young girl, and to dance those dances with her granddaughter. That's all coming up in an entry in the Radio Family Journal. You won't want to miss it. I'm Sam Payne.
You're listening to The Appleseed. We'll be back in a moment.
Welcome back to The Appleseed. Here's Sam Payne.
It's great to have you back with us on today's episode of The Appleseed. Before the break, you heard a story called El Pájaro Cu del Perú, a story told for you bilingually by Lini Del Siemens. Coming up, a story from Lynn Ruhlman, a story called Real Baby Maybe. But first, an entry in the Radio Family Journal.
The Radio Family Journal with Sam Payne. A tiny little story for you and your family. Right when you need it, on The Appleseed.
I don't even know why I said yes to this, but when I was 16 years old, a lady down the street asked if I'd come and help her with a church project. Her name was Bella, and she was perhaps the oldest person in my neighborhood. I thought maybe she'd hoped I'd come and clean out some rain gutters or something, but when I went over to her house, she invited me into her living room and told me what I'd be doing. She had created a show that she was preparing for the next meeting of the church ladies group a month away, and the show was called Bella's Hats, and in this show, an old woman named Bella is sitting in a living room with an enormous hat rack filled with hats saved from the span of her whole life, and one by one, she takes a hat down and sighs and reminisces out loud about some memory associated with the hat. But Bella thought the show might get a little boring if it consisted only of a woman talking about her hats. And so each memory associated with each hat would also be associated with a dance number, a dance popular at one time or another during the life of this character. So, for example, Bella would take down a hat that reminded her of dancing with a handsome soldier during the war. And somebody pretending to be the soldier would come out on stage, and somebody pretending to be Bella would come out on stage, and they'd dance the dance in her memory, while Bella stood to the side, gazing in a state of reverie at the hat she'd pulled down from the rack. And then at the end of the show, this character, Bella, who had ostensibly taken all these old hats out to give to Goodwill, would decide that the memories brought on by the hats were too lovely and too important, and in the end she keeps all the hats, and that's the show. And that's what she decided she needed my help with. Every memory, every hat, every dance in the show was somehow about a boy and a girl, and she wanted me to play the boy. She wanted me to learn all these dances and go to the performance of the show in front of the church ladies group and perform in Bella's Hats, the epic stage show. Well, I would very much rather have cleaned out rain gutters. I'm no dancer. Anyone who has ever known me knows that, but I asked who would be playing the girl, my dance partner, in every scene, and she told me that her granddaughter, Nanette, would be playing that part. Also, that we'd be rehearsing every Tuesday and Thursday for a month. And, well, I agreed to do it. And maybe that's because she had a picture of her granddaughter, Nanette, on the piano in her living room. Maybe that's what clinched it for me. When it was a smooth month of ups and downs, I learned the cha-cha and the waltz, and I learned the tango. And when I say I learned these things, I mean, I got so that I could do them all the way through without falling down. And just when I thought it might be okay, and that I might be okay at it, and that, after all, Nanette was probably feeling all the same misgivings as I was. After all, we were both just teenagers who didn't know anything. I went over to Nanette's house to pick her up for rehearsal one day, and I saw over the fireplace in her house an enormous painting of Nanette herself in a ballet outfit, bending gracefully to tie her ballet slipper. And when I saw that painting and told her that I didn't know she danced, she said, "Yeah, I've been dancing since I was 4. And so there I was, all alone again, having learned that Nanette, who I had all this time thought was probably as nervous as I was actually a ringer. an old ballet pro who was probably laughing at my every step on the dance floor, and for sure I would have preferred to clean out the rain gutters. As it turns out, though, Nanette was patient and kind with me, even if her grandmother sometimes got impatient as I stumbled around her living room, trying to figure these dances out. And the lesson that Bella hoped to communicate to the church ladies group, that memories are important and worth talking about, and worth saving artifacts about, and worth making shows about, well, I kind of bought that. I believed it. I believe it still today. I never got much better at dancing, but I survived the show. And Nanette and I stayed friends for a season, and I think I wound up enjoying it a lot more than I would have enjoyed cleaning out rain gutters. And now I, myself, have a closet shelf full of hats. Hats purchased as souvenirs of ball games and music festivals and Boy Scout trips. Hats that help me remember good times and bad. None of them are as fancy as the hats on Bella's long-ago hat rack. In fact, most of them are just ball caps. But if any of them can bring me back to days on the sidelines or in the mountains or in the audience or even tangoing across the floor of Bella's living room with Nanette, trying to look a little less nervous than I felt, well, then, they're doing their job. And if you ask me, it's a job worth doing.
The Radio Family Journal with Sam Payne. A tiny little story for you and your family. Right when you need it, on the Appleseed.
Thanks for joining us for that entry in the Radio Family Journal. We always hope that the stories that we bring you here on the show spark memories and thoughts for you that you can share with the people that you love. Got a dance story somewhere in your past? Well, maybe you can share it. Coming up, a story from Lynn Ruhlman called Real Baby Maybe. And we're going to bring you a song called Shoes from the award-winning storyteller and songwriter Susan Reed. But first, a conversation with a friend. Great stories come into our lives in so many ways, whether we're remembering a wonderful meal and sharing the circumstances surrounding that wonderful sensory memory, or whether we're sharing a folk tale with people that we love around the kitchen table or the living room or the campfire, or whether we're talking about a television program or a film that we've brought into our heart somehow. All these ways are great ways to get great stories into our hearts and minds. And of course, we can't leave out the wonderful books that we bring into our lives. And I'm here to chat with Rachel Wadham. It's such a pleasure every time she comes into the studio with us. We are at a distance from each other. We're talking to each other over a Zoom call. But Rachel, Yay! It's such a pleasure to have you with us.
It's always good to be in your presence, Sam, no matter what that means, if it's virtual or physical.
Rachel is, of course, the Education and Juvenile Collections Librarian at Brigham Young University and brings to us, as often as we can have her, a wonderful conversation about a book that you might enjoy looking at or reading. And we're talking today about The Blue House. It's a picture book. Tell us a little bit about The Blue House.
Yeah, this is a book by Phoebe Wall, and it is a lovely story. There's a young boy in it, Leo, who lives in this beautiful blue house with his dad. And it really is their home. They've made it their home, right? They cook, they dance, they are together in this beautiful little house. And Leo has this sense of it's going to last forever, right? This is our space. But unfortunately, what happens is the landlord sells the land and the house is going to be torn down. So they have to move. And of course, that's really hard for Leo. He has to reconcile himself with that. And there is some anger with that. And there's a beautiful part in the book where the dad says, yeah, you know, we can be angry about this. We don't have to hold that in. And they do an angry dance, right? And they play some thrasher kind of music on the guitar. And yeah, we're gonna be angry about this. And then they find a new place and they move and they start making it their home again. Yeah. And I love that beautiful sensibility of a book like that. One of the things that, you know, immediately comes to mind for me is when I was a little girl, my mother used to read me Virginia Lee Burton's The Little House.
Sure.
And that's an award-winning book. A lot of people may have heard of it. So when I read this book, I immediately went back to those kinds of caring memories of being read to as a child and this other book that I connected to. But the interesting thing is I've never moved. I mean, literally, I have never moved. I'm one of those rare folks in the world that I actually live in the same house that I was born and raised
in. Oh, wow. Even now.
Even now.
Heavens.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So the only time I left was when I went away to graduate school for a brief time and then came back. And so I've only in my life lived in two homes, the one when I was in graduate school and this one. So I don't really relate to that piece of the book, right? Where we move, you know, where we're moving. But that's one of the things I love about stories is just because it doesn't relate our exact experience and the exact experience that we have, there are connections that we can make and very emotional connections with these stories. Because in my life, I've had a lot of changes.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. That's what I was going to say. They're stories about change, aren't they?
Yeah. And moving on.
While you may not have moved.
Yeah.
Certainly things have changed for you, right?
Yeah. And I will say when I was quite young, my father passed away. Mm. And that was a significant change in my life, right? Very significant, almost like moving, right? I had lost something significant in my life. And I those were the kinds of feelings that this story brought up, of the feelings that I felt, and particularly that anger that I felt when my dad passed away. And when I was really mad about, why did he leave us, he could have stayed, why didn't he stay? Mm. And I really love this kind of sense of, I worked through that anger and I was able to come to grips with that. And, of course, with grief, it's always hard. I miss my dad every day and he's been gone for over 30 years, but I've moved on and I've been able to come to grips with that. And so in this particular instance, this story brought up those kinds of feelings for me and those kinds of sense of nostalgia about those major changes I'd had in my life. So for me, that's one of the wonder of story, right?
Yeah.
That's one of this foundational wonder is we can experience through story, not exactly what the characters or the story has experienced. We don't have to, because it will allow us to experience in our own way some of our own emotions and feelings, and then also understand, this is how I felt when my dad left. And so that must be what it feels like. There must be some of those similarities of feelings when you have to move or when you have these other kinds of changes. And that to me builds empathy.
Sure. Those are the exercises that help us, that help bring us together.
Yeah. And that to me is one of the reasons that stories do build empathy, right? Is because they bring up these emotions that we understand, and then we can then apply those to other kinds of situations, right?
Yeah.
And I really love that sense, because for me, foundationally, that's what stories is about, is really getting into other people's lives and being able to connect through those foundational stories. And that is what this book did for me.
Oh, as you're talking about it, I'm thinking I grew up and, until I left home for college, I lived in the same house that I had grown up in. And when my mother finally sold that house, we were all grown-ups, but it didn't keep us from feeling. We were not so mature that we were not moved, that we were not rocked.
You didn't feel the loss.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
We gathered together from all parts, and got together in the front yard and took photographs and it was quite a moment for our family. And what an opportunity to sort of process some of those moments, the reading of a great book filled with great pictures. And that's the kind of book this is. The Blue House we've been talking about with Rachel Wadham, a picture book worth picking up. Rachel, it's always such a pleasure to have you. Thanks for joining me.
My pleasure.
Great stories come into our lives in so many ways. Always a pleasure to chat with Rachel Wadham about a great book. In just a moment, we're going to get to a story from Lynn Ruhlman called Real Baby Maybe. And of course, we're going to get to a song called Shoes from the great songwriter and storyteller Susan Reed. It's all coming up right after this. I'm Sam Payne.
You're listening to The Appleseed. We'll be back in a moment.
Welcome back to The Appleseed. Here's Sam Payne.
It's great to have you back with us on today's episode of The Appleseed. Before the break, a conversation with Rachel Wadham about a book called The Blue House. And, of course, I shared a memory of being asked by an elderly woman in my neighborhood to learn some of the dances that she knew when she was a young girl, asked to learn those dances and to dance them with her granddaughter, Nanette. And, of course, coming up, we've got a story from Lynn Ruhlman. This is a story called Real Baby Maybe. When Lynn Ruhlman was a girl, she didn't enjoy playing with baby dolls at all, and she couldn't understand why some kids did. However, when Lynn gets the chance to look after a real baby, her feelings change. Have you ever babysat a real-life baby? Then perhaps you'll understand what Lynn goes through in her story, Real Baby Maybe. Happy to bring it to you here on The Appleseed.
Real Baby Maybe. One summer, my parents took my big sister Karen and me on a trip to Pennsylvania. Part of the trip was visiting a family Karen and I didn't know, but our parents assured us the mom and dad were their friends from a long time ago, and they had kids for us to play with. Karen was excited about visiting what I called the kid family, because one of the kids was a big girl her age. I was excited because the other kid was a six-month-old baby. We didn't have a baby, so I thought it would be fun to play with this one. When we got to their house, the mom and dad came rushing out to greet us and give hugs all around, but there was no sign of a big girl, and the baby was sound asleep in his daddy's arms. Karen and I looked at each other, dismayed. What if we were stuck standing in this yard all day long with no one to play with but grown-ups? We were so relieved when the kid's mama and our mama decided to go off on an errand together, and then the big girl came out to fetch us and take us up to her room. She had her very own record player in her room and a whole box of 45s, little bitty records that only played one song on each side. She started flipping through the records. "What are your favorite songs?" she said. "Who's your favorite singer?" "I think Elvis is just Coolsville, don't you? And Bobby Darin and Gene Vincent. Hey, take a look at this record I just got. It's called Bebop Alula." And she put the little record on the turntable, set the arm of the record player down on it, and out came, "Well, Bebop Alula, she's my baby. Bebop Alula, I don't mean maybe. Bebop Balula, she's my baby. Bebop Balula." The big girl was dancing around her room, and my knees started to bounce up and down along with her, until she reached up and grabbed a doll off the shelf by its leg and started swinging it around over her head, singing, "My baby doll, my baby doll." Karen said, "Gosh, you better be careful. That doll's leg is going to come right off." "Nah, it'll be fine." "Nuh-uh," I said. "My sister says you're supposed to pretend dolls are real babies, and I don't think you can do that to a real baby." The big girl laughed. "Okay." And she tossed the doll to me. I cradled it for a minute. It had those baby doll eyes that closed when you put it on its back and popped open again when you held it upright. Close, open, close, open. But the truth was, I didn't much care for dolls. I knew they weren't alive. They didn't do anything you weren't expecting them to do. They were boring. So when Karen and the big girl started talking about playing checkers, a two-player game, I put the doll down and went downstairs. My daddy and the kid's daddy were in the living room talking, and the real baby was still sound asleep lying on the sofa beside his dad.
I stood in the doorway. The two men both looked up at me. I didn't have anything to say, so I just kept right on standing there till the kid daddy said, "Would you like to take the baby for a walk?" "The real baby?" "Sure. Yes." The kid daddy picked up his real baby and carried him outside. I followed them out onto the porch and right down the steps. There was a baby carriage beside the walkway, and he put the baby inside and turned the carriage around to face the sidewalk in front of the house. "Have a good time," he said, and he went back in the house. I was going to take a real baby out for a walk. I put my hands on the carriage handle, but I didn't move. The kid daddy did not tell me how far I was allowed to go. He didn't tell me what to do with a real baby. I had never played with a real baby before. I had played with dolls, though. Dolls were where you practiced how to treat a baby. And I did already know some things, like you can't swing a real baby around by the leg. So maybe I was ready to take this real baby out for a walk. I looked down the sidewalk in both directions. The baby's house was in the middle of a short block of houses that all had porches and trees out front. I didn't see any other people outside just then, so I pushed the carriage down the front walk and turned onto the sidewalk. I pushed it all the way to the corner. I turned the carriage around and walked all the way back the way we'd come, past the baby's house, and on until I came to the corner at the other side of the house. I turned the carriage around again and stopped. This was really, really boring. This real baby might just as well have been a boring doll baby. I peered into the carriage. Baby was sleeping. "Hey, baby, wake up." I pushed up and down on the handle to jiggle the carriage. The baby's eyes stayed closed. Boring. I reached in and picked up the real baby. His eyes flew open. This was just like the big girl's doll. When he was lying down, his eyes closed, and when I picked him up, his eyes popped open. I tried it again. I tipped him back gently, but his eyes didn't close. They stayed wide open, staring at me. And then his whole little face puckered up, and his mouth opened up wide. "Hey, baby, don't cry." I put him up on my shoulder and bounced him up and down and up and down the way I'd seen adults do when they held crying babies. The baby took a breath, and then his face got red all over, and then he started screaming. I had to put this baby back where he was when he was quiet. I bent over and stuck him back inside his carriage. But when I set him down, his arms were flailing and one of them thunked the side of the carriage. He did not get quieter. He got louder. Now everybody in the neighborhood was going to know that I made the baby cry. The kid daddy was going to know that I didn't know what to do with real babies. I would have to go back to playing with dolls. Maybe dolls were better after all. Maybe it was a good thing to know that there would never be any surprises with dolls. I started running back to the house, pushing the carriage in front of me. But by the time I turned the carriage onto the front walk of the house, I realized that the baby wasn't making so much noise anymore. Maybe he'd liked the ride. The kid daddy was coming out of the house. "Back already?" I pointed into the carriage. The baby was crying. "That's okay. He's probably hungry. Why don't we take him inside?" He picked up the baby, put him over his shoulder, and started up the porch steps. The baby's head poked up over his father's shoulder. What if just seeing me made him cry again? I put my hands over my face, and then I peeked out over my fingers to see if he'd looked away yet. The baby was still staring at me, but he didn't cry. I covered my face up again, and then I peeked out again. The baby smiled. Baby smiled at me. I did it again. Hide, peek, hide, peek. Baby laughed. He was laughing at peekaboo. I followed that baby and his daddy up the steps and inside. I knew now exactly what I was going to do with the rest of my visit to the kid family. I was going to learn what else I could do to make a real baby laugh.
Real Baby Maybe, a story told for you by Lynn Ruhlmann. And up next, a song called Shoes. This is from the award-winning storyteller and songwriter Susan Reed. Have you ever had that experience as a kid, waking up one morning, going to get dressed for school that day, suddenly realizing that your shoes are too small for you? Have your shoes magically shrunk, or have you suddenly grown? Here's Shoes from Susan Reed on the Appleseed.
Baby was born just the other day. Grandma knit booties when she came to stay. Isn't she cute? Look at that nose. Let's count them up. Yep, 10 little toes. But the booties I made, they're already too small. No, they're not, Grandma. She's just getting tall. Changing, growing every day. We're getting bigger in every way. There's so much more that we can. To mention, our shoes are new. Well, that baby started walking and running around the yard, chasing the cat and the Saint Bernard. Those shoes kept her steady and mostly upright, but they were starting to feel a little tight. Mama, small. No, they're not, dear. You're just getting tall, changing, growing every day. We're getting bigger in every way. There's so much more that we can do. Not to mention, our shoes are new. Then there was the birthday. She got the big bike. It was sleeker, faster, had a horn and a light. Use your brakes! She dragged her feet. She stopped sneaker smoking and said, that was neat.
But I think I wrecked my shoes.
It's okay. They're too small. No, they're not. You're just getting tall. Changing, growing every day. We're getting bigger in every way. There's so much more that we can do. Not to mention, our shoes are new. Well, that girl was getting bigger and busier by the day. Homework, drama club, sports, ballet. A school semi-formal, new gown and high heels. And a boy in a tux holding flowers named Neil. Dad caught his breath. Honey, you look beautiful. You used to be so small. Damn, I'm just growing up, that's all. Changing, growing every day. We're getting bigger in every way. There's so much more that we can do. Not to mention, our shoes are new. Well, Neil hung around, best friends for years. They got married, bought a house, both busy with careers. Now they have a little girl of their very own. And Grandma's knitting booties and she's bringing them around. Changing, growing every day. We're getting bigger in every way. There's so much more that we can do. Not to mention, our shoes are new. Changing, growing every day. We're getting bigger in every way. There's so much more that we can do. Not to mention, our shoes are new.
Shoes by Susan Reed here on the Appleseed. We're going to wrap up today with a little piece called Dancing with Arilda. This is me sharing this story and song. It's a story and song dedicated to my grandfather and his young wife, Arilda Madeline Anderson. The story and song are shared before a little live audience of friends. That's where this recording was made. And I hope you enjoy it. Here's Dancing with Arilda here on the Appleseed. My dad's father, Leland J. Payne, he's a little boy. He lived in the Mexican colonies and came north when Pancho Villa rode through town, you know. And as a young man, my grandfather, he lived in Sevier County. All of his life, he referred to himself as a severe pain. That's the family joke. So, thank you for treating it so well. Yeah, that's And he drove the bus. He drove the school bus. And so he was friends with all the little kids in town, you know? He drove the school bus. It was a newfangled contraption. No other town in the neighboring area had one. It was, again, high-tech and brand new. You had but to crank it up in the morning and then drive it around and pick up the kids. And if you're the bus driver, you're kind of a rock star, you know? The kids sing your praises. But his friends thought that it might be tough for him to get a girl if he were the bus driver. So they invited him to a party. And he showed up at the party and he walked in. And almost immediately, he saw the little girl that he wanted to dance with. Her name was Arilda Madeline Anderson. And he went and asked her to dance. And they went out on the floor. And she put her arms around him and she pulled him close. And so he pulled her close, you know, and she pulled him closer. And finally they were dancing so closely that he could feel her heart beating against his chest, and it was just fluttering like a little bird's heart. And he knew that this is how a young woman's heart felt when the young woman who owned it was in love with you. And you know, 5 minutes later, it seemed they were engaged, and by that time, by the time of their wedding, he knew what she had known all along, that while she loved him dearly and even loved him in that first dance, that the fluttering heart was not a manifestation of her love; it was a heart condition. They went to the doctor, and the doctor said, she's got a year to live. And so my grandfather said, well, I'll make it then the best year of her life. And they didn't have money for Paris or Hawaii or any of that stuff. But my grandfather felt like we already lived in the most beautiful place in the world, and so they just needed to spend the days that they had going out and seeing it. So they walked and drove and visited all the lovely places of this place, the place where we lived, the place where they lived. And finally, there came a day when she was too weak to do that. She couldn't do that anymore. And so she was confined pretty much to the house. My grandfather, to continue giving her the best year of her life, said one day, I've got business in the city, but I'm worried about leaving you alone for a day. And she said, I'll be fine. Go and do your business. And so he went and did his business. His business was to borrow a rattletrap old truck from a friend of his and drive to Salt Lake City and buy a piano for Arilda and load it onto the truck and take it back down to their home in Sevier County. And he did. And they drove. It's the piano that I learned to play the piano on. It's now in my dad's house. It's a beautiful old player piano. It had once been a player piano, and now the finish is all crackling, and it, you know, it's some of the teeth are chewed, some of the keys are chewed up on the front edge of the key, because my dad, when he was a kid, I think took a baseball bat to it, but for a while, she loved the piano. There's music in their home. There was you know, I'll Be Loving You Always and Beautiful Dreamer and Moonlight Sonata, and there came a time when she was too weak even to be at home at all, and went to the hospital to spend the rest of her days there. And my grandfather went and pulled up a chair next to her bed, made camp there, and talked with her and read to her. And
One night, a great storm blew up outside. And he says it was a storm like to blow the world in pieces. He spent an exhausting night trying to keep her calm, trying to keep her at rest. And in the morning, not having slept much that night, he said, I'm going to go home and I'm going to take a bath and I'm going to get some breakfast and then I'm going to come right back. And she said, okay. He kissed her and he went home to that quiet house where no music was playing. And he started to do those things that he said he would do. He took a bath and he got dressed and started to make himself some breakfast. When a knock came on the door, it was their neighbor. And the neighbor had both a telephone and a car and said, Leland, you got to come quick. Arilda's bad. We got to get to the hospital as fast as we can. So my grandfather jumped to the car and they drove as fast as the car would take them to the hospital before the car had completely rolled to a stop. My grandfather was out of it, pelting down the hall to her room, where he found that she had already lapsed into unconsciousness. The nurse said, I can give her something to wake her up if you'd like to say goodbye. And my grandfather said, no, she's passed as difficult a night as I have. Let's let her go in peace. Let her rest. Which is what she did. She went away just as quietly as a candle going out. He gathered her and took her home, dressed her in clothes that they'd prepared together, gathered the people that loved her together for a funeral, and then with the blessing of her parents who looked on him as a son, he went to California to seek his fortune. He got a job working for Walt Disney, and he met my grandmother, Maxine Herrick. He asked Walt Disney for a day off. Disney said, what do you want a day off for? And my grandfather said, well, I'm going to get married. And Walt Disney said, hell, Leland, take a week. Which is a story my grandfather loved to tell because it allowed him to put profanity in the mouth of Walt Disney. He had spent 4 years giving Arilda the best year of her life. And he spent 60 years giving my grandmother the best year of hers. Very, very late, quite near the end of my grandfather's life, my aunt and uncle took him down to Sevier County to a family reunion of Arilda's people. He walked in the door, and when they saw who it was that had come through the door, realized who it was, they lifted him onto the shoulders of their affections like a soldier coming home from the war, like a college boy. This is a song for my granddad and Arilda. All the rain came down around us without warning, and we're gone behind the grave this gray morning. Somewhere here between the mirror and the mask, here to answer everything you never ask. And the blue will come on back sometime tomorrow, so I'll come with any comfort I can borrow. There's no safety like the kind I've come to know with you, and as far as God will let me, I will go with you. As far as God will let me, I will go. Even up into the mountain filled As far as God will let me, I will go.
Dancing with Arilda, a story shared before a little audience of friends, and happy to bring that to you here on The Appleseed. A pleasure to share with you all the things that we brought you today. Shoes by Susan Reed, the wonderful storyteller and songwriter. Real Baby Maybe by Lynn Ruhlman. El Pájaro Cu del Perú, a bilingual story from Lini Del Siemens, and a conversation with Rachel Wadham about a book called The Blue House. It's always our pleasure to bring these stories to you. You can find us online at byuradio.org/appleseed. Send us your stories at theappleseed@byu.edu. That's our email address. Of course, you can Google The Appleseed Podcast for something new just about every day on the show. Full hour-long episodes, and also tiny little Appleseed extras, just a few minutes long in case you only have a few minutes and you want to fill those few minutes with a great story. This hour was written by Alyssa Mingurance. Our audio engineer is Carly Robison. Our producer, Jeff Simpson. I'm Sam Payne. Can't wait to be with you again on The Appleseed.
Thanks for joining us for an hour of stories, music, and conversation made for you and your family and brought to you by The Appleseed. The show is a production of BYU Radio. We'll see you next time.